listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Ed McGrogan and Steve Tigner back at you with the Tennis.com podcast, a pre-French Open, pre-draw edition. Actually, the draws will happen tomorrow. This is being recorded on a Thursday. And, you know, Steve, I think we there still is as much to discuss even before the draws come out. You know, in some ways, I think the draws are very relevant to this event. In other ways, it does seem like on actually both the men's and women's sides, we sort of know who we expect to be there at the end, but there's a few wrinkles that could come our way. And the big stories really overall remain the number one seeds, Novak Djokovic, Serena Williams, and really just what they're playing for. It's pretty significant on both sides.
Yeah, you know, we talk about Djokovic every year, now coming into the French, trying to finish, complete the career Grand Slam. This will be the fifth time. You know, he won all three, had all three others locked up by 2011. So this will be the fifth time he's come here looking to do that. That's obviously something that weighs on him. You know, he starts every year making that his priority, and it seems like every year that's the only big tournament he doesn't win. I feel like you sort of saw last week the pressure weighing on him a little. He agitated, easily agitated in Rome. You know, we'll see. Maybe he got that out of his system and he'll be okay. But the French Open is a tough event even for him. Suddenly, you know, he goes into pretty much every other tournament as the big favorite, the overwhelming favorite. But I don't think you can say that at the French Open. We saw last year that just takes maybe a bad draw or a match. His semifinal was postponed over 2 days, a hot opponent, and you know he can lose this thing. For Serena, it's also a big moment for her. She can tie Steffi at 22 majors. She can also tie Steffi. What I think is one of Steffi's most amazing records is she's the only player to win each of the four majors four times. And if Serena,
sort of a slam within a slam of sorts.
If Serena does that here, she'll tie that record. I always thought that was almost Steffi's most impressive record, more than the slam totals. The fact that she could win them all four times. You know, she didn't just dominate at one or two majors. So Serena has that, and Serena also looked, but you know, like Djokovic, this has been her worst major, relatively speaking. He's never won it, but she's won it three times, but she's won all the other six times.
Yeah. Now the big difference between the two is that, you know, coming into this tournament, you know, both of course have a recent clay title. Djokovic in Madrid, Serena in Rome. Now, the other part of that is that Djokovic, in other events, has really done just as well. Has an Australian Open title, of course. Has other significant tournament wins. Serena, we really only saw her reestablish herself this past week in Rome. It's taken a long time, really, since the U.S. Open last year, where everything for the calendar slam, you know, ended right there. It's taken her a long time to get back on track and to see the player that, you know, by measure of the rankings is still way ahead of the field and is still, you know, the clear favorite that you would pick to win this tournament. So I just wonder really how much specifically Serena's quest is weighing on her. And, you know, another difference between the two obviously is their ages. And, you know, while they are still such dominant players, Serena is at a much different point in her career. And, you know, I think to me is perhaps almost the more interesting of the two is really how this could possibly weigh on Serena again, because, you know, it seems to always rear its head at some point in these majors, even during last year's conquest. But, you know, as much as the French Open is a different animal for Novak Djokovic, it's almost as if any major is a different animal for Serena Williams.
Yeah, you know, when she right before she tied Chris and Martina at 18 majors, she got stuck at 17 for three or four slams where she lost early. And she did say that it weighed on her to get to 18 and to tie them. And now she's at 21 and she's lost. She's one away from Steffi, and she's lost, hasn't won the last two majors at the U.S. Open in Australia. And the typical thing in the past was to say that you have to get Serena early in the tournament or you're not going to beat her. And that's been true at the French Open. She lost in the first round when she was the top seed in 2012, and she lost in the second round to Muguruza in 2014. And then the other 2 years, 2013 and 2015, she won it all. So, but I don't know whether that's so true anymore after last year's U.S. Open, where she lost in the semis, and this year's Australian Open, where she lost in the final. So she's had a little more trouble finishing, the slams than she used to. That could come into play. Also, in the same way that the draw will be interesting for Djokovic, it will be interesting to see where Victoria Azarenka lands. She's the fifth seed at the French Open, the fifth ranked player, where she lands in the draw and how that could affect Serena.
Yeah, and I think the WTA draw in that respect could give us a lot of potential trouble areas for a Serena, for any of the big players, because as we saw really since the start of the clay season, the WTA has, I think, been chaotic even for the WTA's sort of standards for chaos, because we have not had much of a semblance of an arc here of really a leader in the clubhouse for this tour. Really, we've seen countless numbers of top 10 players losing first, second round. We've really seen, as you mentioned, Azarenka go from kind of the consensus second favorite to really wondering where, what we can expect from her in Paris. As you say, the five seed, so that, that's interesting where that turns out. Simona Halep down to number six in the rankings. But even if you go down further than that, you see someone like a Petra Kvitova ranked number 12, a Madison Keys at 17. It's another kind of case of really somewhat of an unsettling clay season that we've run into. And I think in many respects that could even make a challenge from Serena's challenge tougher potentially, is there's just so many unknowns at this point. What are you kind of looking for on the women's side as we move past the big name Serena Williams?
Well, I think you have a bunch of people who have done well, shown some life, some potential, and then fallen back. You've had pretty much each of the top women has had their moments. You look at somebody like Kerber, who won in Stuttgart, but then didn't do much else after that. You have Muguruza, who hasn't done anything this year, but made the semis in Rome and looked better there. Azarenka won in the spring in the U.S., but she's been hurt and hasn't done much on clay. Simona Halep won in Madrid and then lost early in Rome. So it's a bunch of, it's a lot of people who seem to be able to put together a run, but you don't know who's going to do it at this tournament. You couldn't really count on any of them. You also have, like you said, Madison Keys, who had a good tournament in Rome, but how long can she keep up that sort of consistent play with her new coach? It's like probably one of these top players will come through and have a good tournament, but I don't think you could really say which one it's going to be. It's chaotic, but it's also, it's not like these players haven't shown their potential this season. So it's interesting in that way.
So speaking of potential and with Madison Keys, someone we've just mentioned here, it was interesting in that Serena, after defeating Keys in Rome at the net, they shake hands, embrace, and Serena says essentially that she will be a future number one, Madison Keys. And you wrote about Keys earlier in the year for Tennis Magazine. A big part of that was actually Keys bringing on Jesse Levine as coach, trying to, I think, it seemed like at that moment, kind of a new stage of her career. That's already passed by. There's already been, it seems like, some change in that. And I kind of wonder where you see Keys at this point, and if anything, since you've written that piece, has perhaps changed your opinion of where Keys may go. It's not that far away from the beginning of the year, but I do wonder, since it seems like Keys really has obviously that game-breaking potential to, you know, perhaps, as Serena suggests, really shoot up the ranking at some point.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing for Serena to say that. You know, I don't think she said that about, say, Sloane Stephens, and I think Keys, I would assume that will be a big thing for Keys to hear, for Madison to hear that she could be number one from Serena if she hasn't heard that before. As far as Keys, yeah, I think at the beginning of the year there was a hope that they could go from a sort of somewhat older coach in Lindsay Davenport, not old, but old, you know, to somebody more her age, maybe more of a, also who sort of is a friend in Jesse Levine. And I think they just found out that she needed more than that now. She's not, maybe they thought she was ready not to have a taskmaster, or a, you know, that she had matured enough to not to have that type of coach. But I think they found out maybe Jesse Levine just wasn't ready for it. Couldn't give her what she needed now. She still needed more of a discipline in helping her mentally. And, you know, they tried Mats Wilander for a couple minutes. And eventually, I think, ended up with Hogstad. I know Hogstad has a good relationship with Madison Keys' agent, who Keys and Maria Sharapova share an agent. Hogstad, of course, had a great run with Maria Sharapova for years. And, you know, I think maybe he's just a more serious, experienced coach with a track record who she can trust as somebody who knows how to make a player as good as she can be. And it seems like in that first week, it's, you know, it's worked, and she was, not only did she do well, but she was really happy and happy with the progress, and felt like he was, you know, doing the things that she needed. So that's good. Now it's the next turn, you know, now for Madison, of course, it's, can you keep that going?
Yeah. So let's shift back to the men here as we started with kind of the overarching Djokovic and Serena quests here in Paris. In Djokovic's case, to me, it seemed that he got everything out of this clay pre-warm-up season that you could expect from him to knock off the checklist. He wins a significant title in Madrid. He beats Rafael Nadal on clay, and, you know, overall doesn't really, you know, once he got past the his loss much earlier, it seems a long time ago, to Wiesley in Monte Carlo, you know, I didn't get any sense of Djokovic not coming into this tournament in absolute top form, despite a loss to Murray in the Rome final. And, you know, as it relates to Murray and Nadal, you know, all of them, I think both of those guys really come away with the clay season, you know, thinking that it's turned out just as well for them. Murray winning in Rome, of course, you know, beating Djokovic, and in a Rafa really kind of getting back to that presumptive, you know, favorite, perhaps against everybody but Djokovic on clay. He had a nice run early in the season, Monte Carlo, Barcelona, to get that sort of aura back a bit on clay that's really been sort of that's vanished a little bit over the years. So I think on the men's side, it's, you know, all three of the top guys have to be pretty pleased with their progress at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Djokovic, he needed some rest after Monte Carlo. He got that. He needed to get back out and get matches, and he won in Madrid That was important. He beat Rafa. That's important. You know, he can't lose that match. And then I feel like in his head, after he'd done that, he was almost halfway to Paris, you know, but he still had to play Nishikori and Murray. He almost looked in those matches as if he wasn't sure how much he wanted to be out there. He hurt his ankle against Nishikori. You know, he didn't look happy in either of those matches. I think maybe now it's just for him, it's just time to get on with the Grand Slam. But I think he's looked good. I would say the one problem possibly for Djokovic is the other two guys, Rafa getting back to his, you know, close to his top form, and Murray now with a definitely a higher level of confidence than he's ever had. He has to feel like he can win the French Open. It must be the first time he's ever felt like that. So that, in a sense, is probably the only problem for Djokovic, is those two guys come in with pretty much nearly equal level of confidence.
Yeah, and if you actually went on the ATP site, they listed the winning percentage on clay for those three guys over the past 52 weeks. Murray 85%, Nadal 84.8%, and Djokovic 83.3%. So it shows just what the separation of these three on clay, and obviously just I think the shared confidence that they come into at Roland Garros here. Looking at potential pitfalls along the way, there's certainly the defending champion, of course, Stan Wawrinka, who, you know, as we've gone into this, it's not exactly breaking news that Stan can really just kind of appear and really take over from there if he's calibrated correctly for that fortnight. Stan, obviously someone that, and of course I mentioned the draws will be out tomorrow, that whoever is really saddled with potentially facing him, that is a problem that will have to be overcome. Kei Nishikori, you mentioned, probably the fourth best clay season by far amongst ATP players goes to Nishikori, you know, with the exception, with the caveat that in all of his instances against Nadal and Djokovic where he just could not get through at the end, taking losses 7-5 in the second, 7-6 in the third, 7-6 in the second, just, you know, kind of in a way I feel like the same story for Nishikori is that, you know, now he, you know, I think his belief against these guys has improved over the years, and I think the physical ailments that have really defined him a long time, I think he has worked his way past those two areas of concern. But, you know, in this results-based business, that's really the thing that's holding him up, is he just has not been able to break through. And, you know, third, I think you really at this point have to mention Nick Kyrgios as someone who is another threat to even the top guys here. I think 2016 has been a very strong year for Kyrgios. Seems to have moved past and I think a lot of us have moved past the ugliness of the Wawrinka match last year, and we're seeing really him, becoming that, I think one of the ultimate dark horses, and, you know, capable of putting forth that, you know, Wimbledon win over Nadal, even on clay against somebody else.
Yeah, Kyrgios is the proverbial guy that none of the top guys are going to want to face, and that includes Djokovic and Nadal, Murray. He's definitely a wild card in this draw. And, you know, I feel like Nishikori is sort of the where Wawrinka was around 2012, 2013, getting close every time but not getting across the line. We'll see whether that ever changes for him. As of now, you put him at the top of the second tier of favorites for this. And in a way, I have to think Wawrinka is just as much a danger to win the tournament as he was last year. not really any less. He didn't come into last year's tournament having done much, and he won it. It's, you know, I think he's still maybe the fourth favorite, really, despite the fact that he hasn't really played well most of this year.
One name we didn't mention, Dominic Thiem, clearly has built a lot of momentum this year. You know, what in your mind, what is kind of a successful tournament for him at this point? He will of course be looked at as a and he'll be a top 16 seed. So, I mean, to me, it does seem like, you know, a second week is what we should perhaps expect from him at this point.
Yeah, I think you could look at the quarterfinals as a success, depending on his draw. I mean, in a way, I thought he was going to be a bigger threat coming into the clay season than he's turned out to be. He hasn't come up with any huge wins on clay. I think he still needs to learn how to pace himself in a way. He goes for a lot even on clay when he doesn't really need to. He hits bigger than he needs to, and maybe those are just lessons he needs to learn. I think quarterfinal finish would be good for him, but I think he still needs to learn to play, to sort of manage matches, I guess you would say, play matches well on against the bigger players. But yeah, I think the quarters for him, and I think we also, you know, of course, have to mention Roger Federer, who hasn't pulled out of the tournament, but could play a role depending on whether he does or doesn't with the draw. Maybe that's more where he'll play a role this year than in the actual tennis. I don't think he's really expecting to do much at the French this year after his various injuries.
I do, you know, and that's principally because Nadal is the 5 seed and could potentially be moved up elsewhere to avoid Murray, Djokovic till the semis. Federer, I do think that streak, that Iron Man streak of 65 consecutive slams, I would be pretty surprised if he pulls out. But though, if he does, I mean, maybe we're really seeing that this injury is a little more serious than we've potentially been letting on here.
I would also think at this point he would want to be practicing on grass by now, you know, if he really had his choice.
And that was the intention all really since the beginning of the year. I mean, it was only to play at Roland Garros.
Yeah.
That changed, and you know, like you said, it for Federer, clearly the main focus is beyond Paris at this point. And we'll see really what kind of effort we see him put forth here at this event here. Anything else on the men's side before we wrap things up that come to mind? There's obviously the annual French Hope that will be, you know, it'll be talked about at some point in the broadcast. The broadcast, I should mention this year, Tennis Channel grabs almost the entire tournament. This is ESPN actually does not do any coverage of the French this year. That should be mentioned. NBC will pick up the finals, and I believe a little more at various points. But this is almost a Tennis Channel exclusive tournament that's worth mentioning too.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that works out. I guess the thing with the men's tournament is I guess the first week we'll see the French hopes, like you say, Monfils and Tsonga will be, you know, in the big court having probably the long matches and getting the crowd into it. But I feel like this is a tournament that, just as much as any other or in recent years, is just dominated by the top four guys, maybe mainly the top three guys. They seem to have a lock on this one, at least going in.
Yeah, I think so too. So we will, and we'll have plenty of coverage of it, of course, starting on Sunday. This is the one major that likes to begin on Sunday, so we'll do that. Plenty of coverage throughout the 2 weeks, as well as some podcasts too. We'll try to fit those in. So for Steve Tigner, this is Ed McGrogan, once again here at the Tennis.com podcast. Thank you again for listening.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.